Conversations with Friends is a new series.
A series within a series.
Creative conversations between writer friends.
We were blown away by the calibre of the pitches we received from established, mid-career, debut and emerging writers.
From those writing poetry, fiction, non-fiction, plays, newsletters and PhDs.
Conversations to get you through these strange COVID days and beyond.
Sit back, stay home and enjoy.
Jane Harper is the best-selling author of Australian crime novels The Dry, Force of Nature and The Lost Man. Her next book, The Survivors, is out September 2020. Jane has won numerous top awards, including the CWA Gold Dagger Award for Best Crime Novel, the British Book Awards Crime and Thriller Book of the Year, the Australian Book Industry Awards Book of the Year, and the Australian Indie Awards Book of the Year. Jane's books are published in more than 35 countries worldwide. The Dry has been adapted into a major motion picture starring Eric Bana as Aaron Falk and is due for release in late 2020.
Karina Kilmore is a debut fiction author. Her crime mystery, Where the Truth Lies, was released in March 2020. Karina has been a newspaper journalist for almost 30 years and has had more than 3 million words published in newspapers and magazines. She is also the author of 3 non-fiction books about finance. Her unpublished manuscript for Where the Truth Lies was her first attempt at writing fiction and was shortlisted for the Victoria's Premier's Unpublished Manuscript Award. She is also a national convener for Sisters in Crime Australia. And Karina and Jane have been close friends for many years after first meeting and working together as business journalists in Melbourne. We are so thrilled that they are part of this series.
There is so much good advice in this episode, Kate. It is like a masterclass.
It is a masterclass. I took so many notes and I loved that, like, they were learning things about each other at the same time as well.
I tell you what, though, journalists have a work ethic, don't they? Like, honestly, every journalist you ever meet is like, bang, bang. You just sit down, you have a deadline, you have 800 words and you write to the deadline.
And you do it. And they don't seem to angst about it like we do.
No. They just do it. They're not precious. I guess you get used to being edited, don't you? Like, that's part of being a journalist. You're questioned and sort of interrogated
maybe
a bit about what you've written.
The different processes they explain, and they will explain much better in it. It's such a good episode in terms of the writing advice that they both give.
I keep thinking about Where Jane Begins.
Oh, go on.
Which is at the end. Like,
yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense. Because often you start at the start and you either A, don't know where you're writing, or B, you're writing to an end, but you have to kind of shoehorn all these bits and pieces and red herrings and this, that and the other to get to that end. But really, if you start at the end, you just work back, because the start is, there are many starts that can get you to that end.
It's very practical. I must admit, I did think of you when I was listening to this episode and I was like, I reckon Catherine will just go straight for this. Very clear.
Is this my new beginning is the end point? Because we also spend so long perfecting the beginning, stupidly, because you end up chopping it anyway.
And also that it can be your own red herring and send you off. And that's what I think. You're right. They're both so efficient with their words. So that idea, I love how Jane says that she tries not to write a scene unless she's pretty sure that it's going in.
Yeah.
So there's no writing a million extra words like I've done. There's no writing 70,000 words in the wrong direction.
Exactly.
God, no, she hasn't got time for that. She's Jane Harper. She's got to put out another book.
But also just that thing where you're like, this is not quite a big enough reveal, or it's not significant enough, the circumstances of this event, for what I'm trying to make it mean. I always think I write it and it will become that, but generally not.
I think that there's
clever women.
Yeah, and I aspire to be them, and I don't think I'll ever have that. I'll ever nail that kind of process, because I'm too wafty. I have to write down too many words first, but I just, it's like this shining goal up there going, I want to be like that.
It's just so pragmatic.
The other great piece of advice, and there's so much in here, but I wanted to underline what Karina said about keeping the writing clear and not overwriting, and just that very simple strategy of stopping and saying it out loud and then writing it down. Like, say it in the clearest way you can, as if you're explaining it to a friend. Okay, now that's the way you put it in. So simple.
Yeah, which is, I mean, I was thinking about the pitching episode that came out recently, because it's the same kind of thing. You get bogged down when you're planning a pitch or writing a synopsis in bits and pieces, but when you explain it to someone, you naturally do that in a really simplified way. You know, you edit very easily.
Yeah, there is so much in here, and not just for crime writers. And I know Karina would say, you know, she talks about being kind of shoehorned into that genre anyway, but there's just so much in here for writers, full stop.
And we should also add for this episode and the rest of the episodes in this series that we have been successful in our application for funding from the City of Melbourne.
Yay! Let's talk about perseverance here, because we have gone for a lot of grants in our time, Catherine, and this is our first one, and we're thrilled.
Super, super exciting. So it means that what was originally going to be a 6-part series is now a 24-part series, which is very, very exciting. And I am speaking into my new, beautiful, not sure the name of it, microphone.
It looks amazing on you.
That very clear audio sound. So a big thank you to the City of Melbourne. And because of them, you can look forward to more conversations with friends with fabulous combinations like Karina and Jane every Friday, helping you and our industry through these tricky times.
Hello. Hi, my name is Jane Harper. I'm an author of 3 Australian Force of Nature and Lost Man. I'm an author and I live in Melbourne. And today I'm happy to be chatting to my good friend Karina Kilmore. Hi, Karina.
Hi, Jane. I'm Karina Kilmore. I'm also known as Karina Barrymore. I've had a double-barreled last name, but only ever used Karina Barrymore until now, until I decided to become an author. And Kilmore is a great name for a crime writer, as it turns out.
It is.
I've been a finance journalist for about 30 years. I'm also a mum of a teenage daughter. That's the toughest job on the planet. And I've written 3 finance books, but Where the Truth Lies is my first fiction novel. Jane and I have been friends since we started working together as journalists. And although I've been a journalist almost, or a writer almost 30 years, I'm just a baby beginner when it comes to fiction. Jane, on the other hand, is an experienced and multi-award-winning fiction writer. So we're both at very different stages in our writing careers, and we thought over the next 30 minutes we'd share some of the most valuable things we've learned along the way.
Yeah.
Jane, can we start with you?
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm really keen to know what the difference is between writing your first novel and then writing the following 3. Because for those who don't realise, Jane's 4th book is coming out later this year. So I was wondering, what are some of the things we can all learn, but especially me, I definitely want to learn, from the different stages in your career so far?
Yeah, I think, I think the good thing about the more books you write is the better you get to know your own style in terms of the working style that works for you. Because, you know, you ask authors how they write books and you get so many different answers. And I think, you know, it's important to respect that and really understand how you can go about getting your words on the page. But I think the more you do it, as with many things, the more you get to know what actually helps you perform in the best way. And I think the biggest eye-opener for me has been there's lots of little things that really require, like, almost no effort and have really significant results. So I'm going to give you one example, which has been honestly a game changer for me. And it sounds so simple.
Oh,
I think you're going to think I'm overplaying it, but I swear by it. And that is that I write down every idea I have. And every single time, doesn't matter what I'm doing, like I'm in a supermarket, lying in bed, watching TV, whatever I'm doing, if I have an idea about the book, I get my phone and I have a special folder in the notes section and I write it down at that moment. Like, I don't leave it 10 minutes. I don't think I'm going to remember it tomorrow. Like, I do it right then. And honestly, the number of times that has saved me, because you think at the moment, you know, you have this idea and you think, oh, that's a great idea. I'm definitely going to use that. And you think, I will definitely remember that. There's no way I'm going to forget that. And I promise you, the number of times I've opened up that folder and I've been like, my God, I didn't even remember having that idea. And it's stuff that I use. Like, it's absolutely stuff that completely ends up in a final copy on the shelf. And I'd completely forgotten I'd ever even thought about it. So in terms of, you know, something that the effort required is basically nothing. And the payoffs are like 1,000 times there. And I noticed there's like authors I've heard, like really successful authors, you say, oh, you know, I tend to remember the good ideas. And you know, I can respect that. But at the same time, how do you know? Like, how do you know what you don't remember?
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. And honestly, it happens all the time. I mean, I like to do it. You know, I like to do it on my phone because then I can search by keywords. So I'll be sitting there maybe trying to write the book and I'll be thinking, you know, what did I think about this thing? And I'll put in the character's name and all my notes from that character will come up. And I'll go, oh, yes, that's right. And honestly, I've like solved problems for myself. It's like a gift from your past. You know, it's like sometimes I look and says, I'm like, oh, thank you, Past Jane. Like, that's exactly, yes, that's exactly what I need to do. And I've already done the work. You know, I've already had the idea. I'd just forgotten I had it. And it makes me, maybe when I said it out loud, it makes me sound like, I don't know, completely ditzy. But I think when you're writing a book, it's such a big undertaking. There's so many layers and so many things you have to keep in mind. If nothing else, it just frees up your mind to think about other stuff. You know that that idea is recorded and you can just go ahead and like think about other things. So that is something that I really, you know, rely on a lot for, you know, especially now.
It's like a little treasure trove, isn't it? You can dive in there and find stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, so you've written your first novel, Where the Truth Lies, and now you're working on your second one. So what have you learned from books 1 to 2?
Oh, gosh. When I started writing, I didn't think too much about it. I just sort of set myself a really tight deadline. Jane, as you know, or in fact, I think you suggested, I wanted to enter the a manuscript award. It was the one you'd won a couple of years earlier, the Victorian Premier's Unpublished Manuscript Award. That's the proper title, I think. So I had a deadline, which is, as a journalist, I just love. And I had a word count, which another thing I needed as a journalist to do. So basically I just divided the number of days until the competition by the number of words and came up with a word count, and that was 2,000 words a day.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's what I do. If I have like a tight deadline, I'll work out where the deadline is, how many days, and then as long as you do that many words per day, you know you're going to hit the deadline. Like, I do that. Anyway, I'm sorry.
No, that's the journalist in us, I think. That's just how we work. You know, you're told to write a story in so many words, and so you just sit down and do it. So 2,000 words a day, I thought, oh, that's a lot, but, you know, that's okay. Physically, I can do that. The problem I found was that finding the time to do it, that was the biggest issue I had. Because I was working, you know, I had a busy life, teenage daughter, husband, dogs, my mother in aged care, you know. Actually, I don't really think it matters about what you've got going on in your life. It's hard for anyone to find extra time. So I ended up sitting in bed each night, and before I went to sleep, I had to hit my word count. I called it my word o'clock. It was sort of like, oh, my God, some people have beer o'clock or wine o'clock. I had my word o'clock. It meant I could close down the laptop and go to sleep. So it was sort of like, but so hard to do, but, you know, that's the way I did it. And the biggest problem I had also, partly because I've been a journalist for so many years, and as a journalist you're writing facts, you've got all the information in front of you, you know, you've researched it, you've interviewed someone. But then as a novelist, I didn't have any facts, you know. I had to make this stuff up. I had to, you know, plot this story. I had to, you know, invent these characters. I found that really probably the trickiest hurdle for me. So all of a sudden I was sort of free-ranging, you know. I didn't have any constraints. I just had to sort of sit down and start writing.
How did you tackle that then?
I think it's that discipline as a journalist. You just have to keep writing. you know, even if it's not that good, even if it's, you know that you're going to have to go back and edit it, you know, or you know that that's not quite the feeling you wanted to evoke, you just have to write. So I just wrote anyway. And, you know, in the end, I ended up with a whole lot of words I didn't want. But at least it was on the paper, or at least it was on the screen, you know. The second time around, I'm sort of, I'm just over halfway through the second novel. I'm finding it easier. I think the first time you do anything, you know, big or small, doesn't matter what it is really, the first time you do anything is always the hardest. Mm. So this second time is easier, but it's still, you know, it's still hard. It's a hard job writing. I mean, Jane, from your experience, I mean, for people trying to write their debut, you know, what's the most valuable thing that you wish you'd known back then, you know, wish I'd known, you know, what would have liked to have known? Yeah.
I think actually sort of building on what you said, that when you're writing a book, it's all on you. You know, you have to create everything from scratch, really, unless, you know, I mean, even if you've got experience in a certain field or something, you know, to write a novel, you have to bring so much to the page yourself. And I think one of the biggest things that, you know, I sort of tell debut novelists is that you can't do everything at once. And I think a really good place to start is with the plot. And I think it's really important to make sure that your plot works, because, you know, we all sort of fall in love with characters, and people talk about how characters, you know, kind of drive them through the book, and that's true. But you need to give your characters something to do. And if you have an interesting plot, it's so much more easier to write interesting characters, because they're doing interesting things, you know, and they have interesting things happening to them. So my key advice is to really sit down and make sure that your plot works before you kind of worry about characters and their backstory and everything else. Just get your plot solid. And the way that I do that is I actually tend to start from the end. So often when I'm kind of thinking about ideas for books, I'm not thinking about the opening. I'm actually thinking about, like, the conclusion, like that moment where, as a reader, you're like, you know, in the book where you're like, oh my God, that's what happened. That's why this is this, and that's why this is that. And, you know, at that moment, that's kind of what I'm starting with. And then from there, I sort of work backwards almost. And I think about maybe the kind of, what kind of characters I need to, you know, the setting, what kind of characters I would need to kind of bring that kind of conclusion to life. And then I sort of think, where do I want to drop the reader into this story? So what point do I want to introduce them to this chain of events? Is it eventually going to lead to this end point? And the benefit for me doing that way is I know that, I know that I'm not going to write myself into a corner. Like, I'm not going to end up with characters who are stuck in ways that I can't resolve, because everything is leading into this point that I've already determined. So,
So you actually start at the end, basically. Mm,
yeah, in my planning I do, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Like, when I'm, thinking about ideas. And it just helps, because you still have to build out the whole world. You still get that creative process.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the temptation is to start, obviously, to start, because that's, you know, you think I'm going to have a really great opening and this, you know, fantastic scene that's going to draw people in. But then where do you go from there? And sometimes you can't live up to that. And we all know books that don't live up to that. So if you kind of focus your energy on that fantastic ending, you know, you can create a great start. Like, that's not hard if you know where
it's going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, I wish I'd known that, Jane.
Well, there you go. But I mean, and then just start, like, as a journalist and stuff, I mean, that's one of the benefits we do have, is that you can, you know, you can kind of rewrite, and you can, make, you can bring things together. But I mean, in terms of experience as well, I mean, you're a journalist, I was a journalist, but you've actually brought journalism into your book. So in Where the Truth Lies, you know, the main character, Chrissy, is a journalist.
Yeah.
A lot of the action centers around that newsroom. So how did you go about sort of bringing that personal experience into the fictional world?
I think I was really lucky to be a journalist for so long. I've met so many people through work, Also, I've had a great big dysfunctional family, so I've got lots of characters to draw on. But I guess, like, I like my fiction to have quite a bit of solid reality behind it. So with Where the Truth Lies, almost every situation or character or sometimes even colours or what people were wearing and things like that, everything in the book has actually come from someone I know or a combination of people I know and events that I've been to or stories I've followed. There's a whole lot of first-hand connections in the story, especially like the boardroom. You know, as a finance journalist, Jane, we'd go into so many boardrooms, you know, daily, you know, and like the PR people we've met over the years, I wanted to bring them into the story. The newsroom, of course. And the unions. I come from a big left-wing political family, you know, of truckies and wharfies and things like that. So the wharf setting was really important for something I wanted to include.
Mm.
And I grew up with a front row seat to some of the biggest union disputes during the past few decades. That's, you know, not just at home, not just through my family's involvement, but also through my work as a journalist. You know, often we get access where a lot of people don't, as you know.
Mm.
And I've also loved being able to be involved in both sides of that big tribal divide between corporations and workers, and I've been able to do that as a journalist. I wanted to bring that into the fiction, you know, fiction sort of reality as well, to bring unions in as part of our normal storytelling, because often they're sort of left out of books, left out of storytelling.
Mm.
So I think I like, you know, first-hand connection. I like basing things on reality. Yeah. And that's probably my two biggest personal influences when it came to writing the book. And
the journalist is such a great character as well for a story like this, because they have that excuse to kind of be nosy.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things too that you find as a journalist. You can come up to someone or go up to someone and just ask them a question. And because you're a journalist, they have this sort of willingness to tell you the answer. Mm. You know, but if you're just somebody in the street, they'll just, you know, tell you to mind your own business or on your bike. But as a journalist, it's sort of like this woven net over them. People sort of feel obliged to answer. Of course, it's all smoke and mirrors, isn't it, Jane? But, you know.
I have to say that I thought when I left the paper, I wasn't, because I had the same experience as you. You know, when you want to talk to someone, you pick up the phone, you say you're calling from this newspaper, and it gives you that kind of air of, authenticity, you know, and they are willing to talk to you. And when I left and I was sort of having to research things for novels, I wasn't sure if people would, how easy it would be to kind of access that kind of information without the umbrella of the newspaper. But I've actually found, for anybody out there who's looking to research their novel, I've found that people actually are surprisingly, well, maybe not surprisingly, but they are actually very willing to help. So if you say, you know, you're researching a book and you really want to get something right and you're interested to kind of get their experiences and hear what they have to say, and you sort of approach it with like a real genuine interest. Like I find people are just as willing to help, actually. They might sort of, you know, think like I don't know, like you're writing a book is a little bit of a less concrete thing. Like, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe you'll, what they say will get used or maybe not. But I think don't be afraid to still reach out and try and get that information from people if you need it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I went down to, I was invited onto the port of Melbourne. That's a really restricted area, you know, because by asking and explaining to people what I wanted to do, they were really helpful.
Yeah. Sorry.
No, go on, Jane.
I was going to say, I mean, I've told the story like a lot of times to people who maybe you've been to any of my events around my third book, The Lost Man, but I mean, I had a retired cop drive me like 600 kilometres across the desert, you know, in his own vehicle.
Yes.
just because I asked him if he, you know, for a bit of information about a tiny outback town, and we ended up going on this like 11-hour road trip together and things, you know. I mean, so, you know, it's amazing what people, how generous people will be, if you kind of just explain what you need, really, and, yeah, approach it with interest.
I agree, but I also think that's probably coming also from a journalist background, because you're used to asking for those favours, or you're used to asking that information. And it's also like it leads me into that idea about rewriting. You know, as a journalist, we always have to rewrite stories. You know, the editor wants it this way or that's not quite right and things like that. But I wanted to ask you, Jane, how do you go about rewriting from one draft to the next? You know what I mean? That's like a huge thing to do. How do you do that?
Yeah, so I'm a big planner, and I know not everybody is, and I think it's sort of important to respect that. Some people don't find that useful, but I do. So I kind of tend to do a lot of really detailed plans before I actually even start really doing a full draft. And I mean, some people could even maybe call them drafts. I mean, I've honestly done plans that are 100 pages long.
Wow. You know?
So I mean, you know, is it a draft or is it a plan? I mean, I would call it a plan. But and the reason I call it a plan is because I use this sort of technique, which I personally, for myself, I call like placeholders. And that's where I'm kind of mapping out the plot and what I want to happen. And I use kind of placeholder scenes where I know I need something to happen to keep the action moving, but I'm not quite sure exactly how that's going to play out. So rather than throw like thousands of words at it, I'll just put in like a little bit of a holding pattern, you know, paragraph, so I can move on and then revisit it. And so the best thing I think you can, the way I sort of improve from like, I guess, plan to plan or draft to draft is by really challenging those placeholder scenes. So I'll give you like a specific example. Yeah. And that is in The Lost Man, no spoilers here for people who haven't read it, but there's the main character is a guy called Nathan, and he has been ostracized from his community for a reason that becomes apparent around like chapter 12. And you know that he's sort of been shunned and you know it's having a big impact on his life, but you don't really know why. And for a long time, I wasn't quite sure why either when I was sort of planning this book. And it was only so I had in my mind, I just had this little placeholder, had essentially something like a pub fight with like a big community figure, something like that, you know, that kind of would have big repercussions and would have a lot of people choosing sides and would have kind of long-term consequences. But that's not very original, and it's not great. So I just kind of had that in as a little kind of holder, and then I do my research and I'm kind of building up this character. And then, you know, as part of the kind of revisiting process and the rewriting process, you need to challenge those ideas. So like a pub fight is not great, so you try and think of something better, like how can I still have that same effect but with something that's more, you know, true to the character, maybe incorporates the setting a bit more, and really brings something kind of a bit more unique to this situation, which became apparent to me during the course of my research. So then I would go back and I would change, I would remove that placeholder thing and I would change it with, you know, my final sort of decision.
How many words would you have in that placeholder? Like, have you sort of developed a whole scene just as a placeholder?
No, I mean, it depends really. I mean, my preference would be to honestly have like two sentences.
Yeah, okay.
You know, because I think that's another reason why I use a placeholder, because if I read a whole scene, if I read a whole kind of pub fight scene, which is say chapters like say 3,000 words, to go back and rewrite that, 3,000 words is a lot of effort, you know. It's quite hard to, you have to kind of dig pretty deep to sort of hit the delete button on that many words. So
yeah,
so that's
I've
why
done
I try,
it.
Yeah, like I try and really minimize, like I try not to write a scene now, on my fourth book, I try not to write a scene unless I'm pretty sure it's going in. And at that point, then I'll actually write it. I'll just kind of, you know, make notes and plan around the edges and stuff until I'm happy that, like, the structure's in place, the plot's working, this is kind of the way the chapters are going to fall. And, you know, and honestly, even then you still have to rewrite, like you still get better ideas. You know, I have whole characters who suddenly halfway through a draft, they'll like suddenly like gain a wife or something, or lose a wife, or, you know, because I'll realize it's better for me if they're in a different position, you know. Yeah. And you just have to kind of go with it. So I'll just keep going and then I'll go back to start and I'll fix the changes. But I think, yeah, I think the real kind of, the key thing, I'd love you all to consider really is just don't, just because it's your first idea, it doesn't mean it's your best idea. You know, sometimes first ideas come because we've seen them 1,000 times, you've seen them on TV and you've read books with them, and that's almost a red flag in itself. You know, what can you think of something better that's more unique to your character and maybe incorporates your setting a bit more? And just really don't let yourself just fall into that trap just because it's your first idea, that has to be how it is.
Yeah, I think that's what I think that's what a lot of new writers do. I think that's what I do too sometimes. And it's not until I go back and read that draft through again that I realise, oh, gee, that doesn't work, or I've read that before, you know, I need to look at it again.
Yeah, so that's the beauty of it. And I mean, well done, you know, for, I guess, acknowledging that's what you need to do, really.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you, Corinne, as well, because you read a lot of books, you know, I guess
once you work and
once you don't, and you're with your other hat on as a books reviewer for one of the major newspapers here in Australia, and also I think you're judging a few competitions this year. So what, tell us all, what, as a reviewer and a judge, Corinne, what are you looking for in a well-reviewed or prize-winning novel?
Oh, gee. I do read a lot. I always have. I think I've used reading it to escape, you know, to find new places to be when I've needed to. And I've just sort of started reading as a young kid, and I just kept on going. I think one of my big bugbears is, as a reader, though, I've written a crime novel or a mystery novel or whatever the label is, Where the Truth Lies gets these days. But I enjoy most genres, but I find one of the biggest things that is hard to get around is when I, look at reviews and they've been often very judgmental, not because that the book isn't any good or the story isn't any good, but often I get the feeling it's because the reviewer personally didn't like that story or didn't like that genre. I see this fault a lot, where a reviewer always almost turns their nose up at a book because it's not really what they personally like. I think being a book reviewer or being a judge is very similar to being a news journalist. I think you've got to realise it's not about you, or in my case, it's not about me. It's about the reader of that review. Will they get a good understanding of the story from the type of writing, from the review that you write, or would they get your sort of limited personal opinion of that book? Mm-hmm. I mean, your opinion is good. It's one element of the review, but overall, it's not about it's not about you. It's about the likely reader of the review. So I always approach every book the same way. It's the same with a restaurant review or a movie or anything you're reviewing. You've got to judge it on, is it good of its kind? You know, is it an enjoyable book of its kind? Science fiction, for example, is it believable? Does it take the reader to a new place? Or romance, would a romance reader be immersed in the story? I don't read a lot of romance, but I do if I have to review it, and I do if I'm judging it in a competition. It doesn't matter what the genre is either. The characters have to be real. Like you were talking about the plot, Jane, it has to keep pulling you through. Will the reader be transported, no matter what type of writing it is? So I think that's mm-hmm. how I approach every book. And this year, yes, I'm a judge with the Davitt Awards, which are awards for women crime writers. And these awards are run every year by Sisters in Crime. So this year there's more than 100 books entered, and I've got my big stack here beside me at home. Oh, and it's huge. But I must say, looking at this pile, it's looking really exciting. I'm really looking forward to it. And Jane, I've just noticed the time. I'm just thinking that we might have to wrap up soon. Yeah. But before we go, I wanted to ask about your new book without any spoilers. What can you tell us?
So not a whole lot in terms of specific detail, only because with the things as they are, sort of announcements of things have been suspended a little bit. But yes, so book four is it's another Australian mystery, and I think readers who enjoyed the first three will enjoy this one. I really actually have to love writing this one. It's set in the rugged coastline of Tasmania. So there's a lot of a lot of water, there's a lot of small town intrigue. It was really good fun. Like I really enjoyed this one. And I think, you know, I'm sort of really happy with how it's come together. And it's scheduled for release later this year. So I guess watch this space. That will be sort of announced in due course in terms of the title and everything. Things start getting back to normal. And also I'll just give a little plug as well for The Dry Movie, which is also I think still scheduled to come out later this year. That's 2020. So hopefully, you know, cinemas open again and things, that will still be on course. We're very sort of excited to see that hit the screen. So yeah, we'll keep an eye out for that.
How did you enjoy Tassie, Jane?
Oh, it was great. I really loved it. You know, I've been a few times before, but not kind of with my, I suppose, with my sort of writer, you know.
Writer's eye.
But it was lovely. It was beautiful, and it was very sort of, it always surprised me how diverse Australia is. You know, you go to places and you think, gosh, this is so kind of unique to itself, and has its own sort of special rhythm and flavour and things. So I really wanted to kind of try and bring that out. And so I'm excited with, you know, see what people think of the new book, really. And what about you? So book two, so is this another Chrissy O'Brien story or?
Yeah, Chrissy O'Brien. She's back investigating another story. This time I've used my Aussie side of my family for the inspiration. If you can't tell already, I'm a Kiwi. And so my family's always been split half, you know, half Aussie, half New Zealand. So this is my Aussie great-grandfather. He was left home at age 7. He came from a really poor working household, and he thought his mum could manage better without him, so he took himself off and he joined a travelling sheep shearing crew around New South Wales and Victoria. So he learned sort of reading and writing around the campfires of Australia. Sheep shearing eventually, he started out as a little roustabout, but that was just the inspiration, a bit like my family's background from the wharves for Where the Truth Lies. But the new book is set in today again, like Where the Truth Lies, and it's based at the Argus newspaper in Melbourne, and it involves a sheep shearing crew and the two sides of the big farming debate these days, which is the big business side of things and the bush or the working side of things. So that's, you know, basically what the second story is about. And have
that's
you got time?
That's a food for thought in that one.
Yeah, it's good writing it. I'm really enjoying it. Mm-hmm. I think we've just got a sneaky bit of time, Jane, before we sign off. Maybe a final top writing tip?
Yeah, let's do final top tips. I think my overall tip really is, I think, you know, if you're writing a book, especially your debut, and I just want to, I suppose, say to you all, like, writing a book is a really big task. And I want to reassure you, it's okay for things not to come together as you hoped first time around. Like, it's absolutely, you know, it's so easy, I think, to get overwhelmed. And I just would, you know, love to kind of, I suppose, give people the sort of permission to sort of take things one thing at a time. You know, you don't need to have it all perfect in your first draft, and it's okay to kind of break things up into stages. So for me, like, I tend to do like plot first, and then I kind of work on the characters, and then I kind of flesh out those characters, their backstories, and then I sort of bring in like colour in like the setting, and then, and only really then is then when I sort of start really worrying about like almost like the actual writing of it, like the kind of making it sort of dynamic and interesting and clear in terms of the actual writing. I really try and lay down the foundations first, and then the writing is kind of like the icing on the cake, really. So
how long would you take to do that? Like, is that months or weeks or?
Yeah, months. I mean, I would spend months planning. I spend longer planning than I do on writing, like a lot longer.
Wow.
Probably two-thirds, one-third maybe. Yeah. Because the thing is, if the plan is right and everything's right, the writing actually does not take that long, because you know, you open up your plan here, okay, this is what I've got to do for this chapter. And then, I mean, yes, you know, 2,500 words is still, you know, a big chunk of words, but you're not having, your brain is freed up. You're not having to think about what am I doing in this chapter? All these things, like who's the characters and what's their relationships and what are they going to do and where are they going to meet? Like, I know where they're going to meet. I know what they're going to say. Yeah. I know what kind of people these people are. So let's just, you know, all I have to worry about is making it clear and kind of hopefully sort of snappy and interesting for the reader. And also would like to say that I think, you know, I'd really like to encourage people to enjoy their writing as well. Like, I think it can feel like a really big task, and when you're in the midst of it, it can sort of feel like maybe more trouble than it's worth. But, you know, it's so rewarding. I think, you know, when you actually see your book finished, like, you'll feel so proud of yourself, like, rightly so. Yeah. You know, well done.
Thank you, Joan.
Absolutely, yeah. But I think it is, like, if it's something you've wanted to achieve, to actually achieve that is really an amazing feeling, and it absolutely, I think, is worth persevering with. So Karina, what's your top tip?
Well, first of all, I'm going to say I'm going to plan more after just listening to that. but that's not my tip today. My tip is don't use complicated or fancy words. Mm. I think it's the biggest mistake new writers make. They feel as if they have to impress someone with their literary prowess, yeah, you know, or something. I don't know what it is. But really, the only job you have as a writer is so that the reader can understand your story. There's nothing else you have to do. You just need to write a story that the reader can understand. So my tip would be don't overwrite and don't overexplain. And a good way not to do that comes from journalism. When you're writing a story in journalism, when you think that things start to get too complicated, you stop. And instead you just say it out loud as if you're telling a friend. And then once you've got the short, sharp version locked in, then you can go back and embellish it a little, but just a little, too much.
I completely agree. I think that's really good advice. I absolutely, like, 100% agree with that. I think that's really worth taking into account.
Oh, good. Thank you, Jane. And that's it for us, I think. We're way over time. So, thanks for having this convo.
Yes, it's Karina. And good luck with book two.
Thank you. Good luck with book four, Jane.
Thank you.
And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Yeah, and good luck to all of you with your writing as well.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
You've been listening to The First Time Podcast. The First Time Podcast is produced by Phoebe 80 and supported by Writers Victoria, the ACT Writers Centre, and our wonderful patrons. This series is supported by the City of Melbourne through a COVID-19 arts grant.